RTVE Audio. Descarga la nueva app y disfruta de los programas de RNE y nuestros podcasts originales.
Radio Exterior de España.
English Language Service.
Greetings from Madrid and welcome to the English language broadcast of Spanish National Radio. Here we bring Spain to you through our shortwave broadcasts. Amy Egan speaking alongside my colleague Marilyn Quintana. What are we doing today, Marilyn?
Recently, the Spanish Central Bank released a report which attributes the increase in housing pricing to the lack of supply. They estimate that in 2025 there will be a deficit of 600,000 houses. The problem might be alleviated with public housing, but Spain falls behind its EU counterparts. 1.5 million houses are needed to reach the European average. On today's broadcast, we look into the housing crisis with Valeria Racu, spokesperson for the Tenants Union.
If we're being expelled from our homes, of course we're going to organize as well, and we're going to fight back, because if the state is not capable of giving us that protection, we will have to find it ourselves.
For today's broadcast, we have help from sound technician David Furones and production help from Cristina Dorado.
Before we get into the rest of the broadcast, the news from Spain.
He decidido seguir. Seguir con más fuerza si cabe al frente de la presidencia del gobierno de España.
Pedro Sánchez will be staying on as Spain's Prime Minister after taking the weekend to reflect on whether or not staying on was, quote, worth it.
His period of reflection began last Wednesday after an investigation into his wife for influence peddling and business corruption was opened at the petition of a conservative group called Manos Limpias, Clean Hands.
Llevamos demasiado tiempo dejando que el fango colonice impunemente la vida política, la vida pública, contaminándonos de prácticas tóxicas inimaginables hace apenas unos años.
For too long we've let mud engulf political life and public life, he said during his televised press conference. We've been contaminated by toxic practices that were unimaginable until a few years ago.
During his 5 days away from public duties, supporters of Mr. Sánchez rallied outside his Socialist Party's headquarters in support. But only time will tell if Pedro Sánchez's latest stunt finally yields results. His opposition has called his actions a carnival and attention-seeking.
One of the projects on Pedro Sánchez's recent agenda has been the recognition of Palestine as a state, a project that saw him touring Europe in search of support from countries such as Ireland and Norway.
Almost 7 months have passed since the Israel-Hamas conflict began, and Israel has been threatening to launch a land operation in Rafah. The US, Israel's greatest ally, has been adding pressure on Israel for a ceasefire in the Strip. Over the weekend, President Joe Biden spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over the phone for almost an hour about possible strategies and about recovering Hamas hostages.
This year's White House correspondent dinner was bogged down by protesters criticizing the US government's alliance with Israel. One organizer complained that the White House Correspondents Association has largely been silent since the first week of the war about the killings of Palestinian journalists.
Meanwhile, pro-Palestine protests demanding America cut ties with Israel on American campuses continue after a weekend plagued with arrests and criminal charges and student suspensions.
In other news, here in Spain, a new pair of pandas arrived in Madrid on Monday, courtesy of the Chinese government.
The Madrilian Zoo will be hosting the pandas for 10 years after signing a cooperation agreement for the protection of the giant panda. These new pandas arrive only a couple of months after the two pandas that had lived in Spain since 2007 and their three cubs returned to China.
In order to preserve the health and safety of the animals, their team of breeders and vets will be staying in Madrid for around 3 months to assist and control the adaptation process and to train the staff of the zoo. The public will have to wait for a few weeks before getting to meet the couple, María José Luis, Communications Director of the zoo.
Después de adaptarse durante un periodo de cuarentena sanitaria que tienen que hacer en el
After
país
adapting during a period of sanitary quarantine in their destination country and the origin country in China, people will be able to meet them towards the end of May.
Spain has been hosting Chinese pandas since 1978, and shortly after then, in 1982, the famous Tulin became an icon as the first giant panda to be born in captivity in Europe. Since then, 5 cubs have been born in Spain. On the 29th of April, we celebrate International Dance Day, a day to remember the value of this art form and claim its potential in other areas, like economy and health.
Precisely this last aspect is what is explored in the Parkinson's Association in Móstoles here in Madrid. Elders diagnosed with Parkinson's disease can join dance classes and see the benefits it brings. Yolanda Macías, neuropsychologist.
Con movimientos muy amplios pero muy lentos, estamos haciendo estiramientos encubiertos. Al principio vienen un poco reacios, sobre todo hombres, pero una vez que entran, les encanta.
With very big but very slow movements, we are stretching. At first they are a bit resistant, especially men, but when they come in, they love it. Dancing can help improve balance and coordination, something very beneficial for those affected by neurodegenerative diseases.
You are listening to Radio Exterior de España.
Prices in Spain have increased at 74.6% in the last 10 years. And in big cities like Madrid or Barcelona, this number is even bigger. Meanwhile, the average salary of Spaniards has only increased around 4%. With these numbers, it is no surprise that more and more people in Spain struggle to pay rent, and it has become one of the most important social problems in the last years. Almost a year ago, the new housing law was approved. This law aimed to alleviate the tension in the housing market, both in renting and in purchasing. But has it actually caused any positive effects in the market? What other measures are needed? To tell us about it, we are joined by Valeria Racu, spokesperson of the Tenants Union. Valeria, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's a pleasure.
Well, we mentioned that there's been a huge increase in renting prices in the last years. What are the causes for this increase?
Well, the thing is that this is not something new, right? Like, we've been seeing that the housing crisis or like housing prices increasing has been going on for at least a decade, right? And the causes are to be placed there. The thing is that after the financial crisis of the late 2000s in Spain, right, 2008, 2009, there was a specific interest in making the rent market as the salvation or like as the solution for that problem, right? Mm-hmm. So we saw how our institutions, how our governments invited external investment to come to Spain and to really seek business out of the rent market. So that's what has been going on ever since then, right? When 2013, the first investment funds from abroad, like for example, Blackstone, were the first ones to come to Spain, to land here. And in the last 10 years, they've increased their portfolio massively. So what we've seen here is that in the end, this has happened because we have ceased to see housing as a place where we should build a home, where everyone should have the right to develop themselves, to grow, to create a family or to live their lives. And what we see is that we just see houses and housing as that business opportunity under capitalism, right? Where you're just expected to get the most out of it.
Mm-hmm. So what is exactly the problem with these external investment funds? How do they operate?
Well, the thing is that they, as I said, like they see housing as a mere business.
So they just want to get the maximum out of it, the maximum profit of our lives, right? So in the end, their business model is based on the fact that they come to Spain, they buy a lot of property, usually because they buy it in a pack, they buy a lot of units together, the price is really low, and they just get a lot of profit out of it, because their plan also goes together with the fact that tenants' rights are not perfect. Well, of course not perfect. I mean, they are not strong enough in Spain. So in the end, like, even when they came, when they landed in Spain for the first time in 2013, there was a change in this legislation. So the minimum duration of a contract was no longer 5 years, but it was 3 years. Mm-hmm. And this was particularly to facilitate that business, right? So every 3 years, because there's not a rent cap, and you can increase the rent as much as you want when a contract is due, then every 3 years they could increase their rent, right? So when the tenants union, the Madrid tenants union and the Barcelona tenants union were born in 2017, one of our first victories at the legal level was precisely to change that. So in 2019, we managed to change the law again and to make it a minimum of 5 years contract for small landlords and a 7 year contract for big landlords. But that wasn't enough, right? Like, even now, because there are no rent caps, because you can increase rent as much as you want at the end of a contract, whenever a contract comes to an end, these landlords, and it doesn't matter if it's a big one or if it's a small one, they can increase the rent whatever they want. And that's what we are facing as tenants.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also mentioned that the new housing law was approved last year. Have there been any changes with this law?
Sadly not. And that has been a huge disappointment, although not a surprise. While the law was being discussed and it was being debated, us from the tenant unions, from other social organizations such as La Pla, right, like the Plataforma Afectada por la Hipoteca, the platform of people affected by mortgages, and many other organizations, we were very clear on the fact that this law was not gonna be impactful enough, because there was a lot of gaps in it, right? Mm-hmm. The biggest gap was the fact that, like, the rent caps that supposedly they introduced are not introduced at the state level, right? Because at the moment housing and the housing regulations fall under regional powers, then it depends a lot on whoever is in power at that particular stage in a particular region in Spain, whether that law is going to be implemented or not in that region. And that is completely unfair. We would never accept, for example, for labor rights to be based on whether you live in Madrid or you live in Catalonia, right? So it doesn't make sense for something as basic as the need for housing, the need for a safe place where to build a home, to also be linked to that, to whoever is in power in your region. But not only that, we also said that, like, it was key that, like, the law didn't include any, regulation or... Not only that, but also we were very clear on the fact that other policies that they introduced, such as, like, for example, agencies' fees no longer being legal, right? Like, for tenants to not have to pay these fees. Well, if you're an agency and you happen to make your tenants pay for it, there isn't any kind of fine that you have to pay, right? Mm-hmm. So we were very clear on this, that, like, you cannot implement a law if you don't have a sanction linked to it. So once again, we see how it's us, the tenants, who have to defend our rights once and again, and go against that power dynamic that exists between the agencies and between the landlords and us. And we have to fight for our rights because the state is not doing it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you spoke, for example, about agency fees. Are there any other practices or any other actions that are illegal but which are normalized?
Yeah, sure. For example, although this is a gap, right? Like, that's also a thing. Like, we have to be very clear on the fact that, like, some of the things we've normalized, that they are illegal and they should exist, but actually they are fraud, right? Like, landlords are committing fraud. So, for example, a clear example, and this is the biggest mistake of the housing law, because it didn't include anything on this, and we were very clear on the fact that, like, if we didn't regulate the tourist market and the short rent market, what is happening right now will happen, right? So what we're seeing is that because there's been a bit more regulation on the rent market, or at least that's what it's looking like, that it's going to increase the regulation, a lot of landlords are deciding to not give long-term contracts anymore, and to rather choose short-term contracts, right? So we're saying that they are renting by month, they are renting maximum by 11 months, which is like the minimum you can choose to rent for, so it doesn't count as a long-term contract, or even like a touristic apartments, right, or touristic rent. So in the end, we're saying that a lot of the houses that were in the market are deciding to not stay in the market because at the moment you can make much more profit by making a short-term contract or a touristic contract. But this is fraud because legally you were supposed to give a contract, but then at the same time that gap in the law exists where no one is looking at whether your contract is truly a short-term contract or not. So then there's this little gap in the law, right? Like, and there's that fine line between the legality and the illegality and the fraud, which is definitely what the landlords are choosing at the moment.
Related to what you were mentioning about tourism, of course, tourism is a big influence in housing prices. ExcelTour, a Spanish tourism industry association, warned about the exponential growth of these types of houses. Only in the first trimester of the year, around 60,000 new tourist homes were registered in the 25 main cities of the country. Only in Madrid, they increased at 30%. Now, last week, we did a program about their impact in the Canary Islands and how citizens are organizing protests against this mass tourism model. Valeria, what is their impact exactly in other parts of the country?
Well, the first impact for sure is that like the tourism in this form is destroying our cities, is destroying our neighborhoods, is destroying our local shops, and of course is making living unaffordable, right? Like what we're seeing in the end is like we can no longer afford to live where we want to live. Like there is a fake idea that you have freedom to choose where to live because you don't have it. Right? Like at the moment, only tourists, only expats, only digital nomads, and only people who actually earn quite above the average in Spain and in Madrid are allowed or have the right to live, for example, in the city center, and not even the city center, but the city of Madrid, right? Because what we're seeing, for example, is that touristification and gentrification is also going beyond the city center. We've always known that the city center is a territory in dispute. And this doesn't happen only in Madrid, but it happens in all the major cities in Europe or across the globe. But at the moment, it's not only happening there. For example, we see neighborhoods such as Tetuán, Puerta del Ángel, Puente de Vallecas, right, a bit more in the outskirts, but still part of the city, who are being extremely gentrified at the moment because they are more interesting for this particular kind of tourism that maybe sees itself as something more hipster, cooler. They want to get a more original vibe of what the city is like. But for example, we're seeing that in Puerta del Ángel, we have these big investment funds. For example, there's one particular one called Madlin that has bought 35 blocks in the area to transform them into short-term contracts and tourist contracts, right? And why that area? Because at the moment it's cheaper, and also because it has this vibe of being more of a working class area, maybe somehow more of a real experience of Madrid. Well, what's the impact that this is having? First of all, we are seeing that the population is being expelled from the area, right? Like the neighbors have to flee because they can no longer afford to live there. Second of all, we're seeing that like local shops and local local businesses, right? Like the day-to-day businesses and family businesses are disappearing because they can no longer afford to pay their rent for the places where they have their business, and also because they cannot compete anymore with these branches and these franchises that are landing in the neighborhood. But third of all, and this is the most risky one, right, and the one that has a longer term impact, is the fact that we are destroying communities. Because in the end, if you're coming to a place and the majority of the people who live there are just being there for a short amount of time, then of course the community won't care whether there is a public school, whether there is a public health center, whether there's good public transportation, like in the end, whether the green areas are good enough, right, and are improving. So what we're seeing is that we're destroying the way in which we perceive life and we live life, because we don't no longer appreciate community, and we are just pushing for individuality, right? And that will have an extremely awful effect on the cities all around Spain and all around the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, the tourism industry is very important in the Spanish economy. Is there any way in which tourism can coexist with decent living conditions and affordable housing prices for locals?
I guess with this, we have to be very clear that it is a mistake that the Spanish economy is so based on tourism, right? In the same way that the Spanish economy was so based on construction and the built environment back in the 2000s, and then we saw the consequences of that, right? But then it's also very important to resignify what we understand by this, because I think there's a myth in which, like, we tend to believe that the tourist industry stays in Spain, right? And whatever money we invest in that industry, then we'll make the most out of that industry for us, for the people who actually live in Spain. But that is extremely untrue, right? On one side, because we know that lots of the money that nowadays is invested in the tourist business and in that market is not national money. We also have these big investors from outside, right? Like these external investors investing in tourism in Spain precisely because they can make a lot of profit out of it. So it is no longer local businesses who make a living out of it, but we are once again making the same ones who are making us leave our homes are also the ones who are making the profit out of it. And second of all, we have to be very clear on this. The people who work in tourism don't have proper rights, right? Like, it is one of the sectors in which precarity is most normalized, and you just have to accept it, whether you work as a cleaner in a hotel, as a receptionist, as a waitress, you will be exposed with a level of precarity that is very, very, very normalized in that sector. So we have to be aware of that we don't want an economy that's based on that, on making other people, like big investors, even richer, and on making our local population poorer and having more precarious jobs. But of course, there's a way of coexisting, but this can only pass through regulation. So we know that, for example, in Madrid, in the city center, there's around 15,000 tourist homes just in the center, around Lavapiés, Centro, Retiro. That can be impossible because supposedly only about 1,000 licenses are supposed to be had there, right? Mm-hmm. So what we see is that, like, in the end, we're creating a tourist sector that is not respecting legality, and without respecting legality, we won't be able to coexist properly. So therefore, if we're being expelled from our homes, of course we're going to organize as well, and we're going to fight back, because if the state is not capable of giving us that protection, we will have to find it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, this year we learned it's the first time that renting prices are higher than 12 euros per square meter, something that hasn't happened since 2006, right before the bursting of the real estate bubble back in 2008. Do you think that there is a renting bubble currently?
Of course there is a renting bubble, and there has been a renting bubble going on for the last 10 years. Like you say, that nowadays we've seen that, like, the price has exceeded a particular limit. Well, we've been touching the highest price we have ever paid for rent forever, right? Like, for the past 10 years, every single month, we would reach a new record. So therefore, this crisis bubble and this rent bubble has been making itself and has been appearing and creating itself for the past 10 years. And we've been saying so for the last 8 years since we started existing in 2017. Now, what's the issue here? A lot of people tend to think that bubbles and real estate bubbles are created by a discompensation between offer and demand, right? So there's this idea that, oh yeah, the bubble exists, so therefore the solution is to increase the offer, because definitely there's a lot of demand, we don't have enough offer, so that would be the solution. Well, that is a huge mistake, because sadly, the offer is there. Like, we have enough housing for us in Spain at the moment, but we're not using it for the social good. So it's not only about tourist apartments it's not only about short-term apartments, but it's also about empty homes, right? Mm-hmm. It cannot be that in Spain we don't regulate empty homes. And in Spain we have close to 3 million homes which are empty at the moment, while we keep evicting people every day, at least 70 evictions per day, because supposedly there's not enough housing, right? So therefore, we also need to find that solution. We know that the government at the moment is very much still following the same mantras that the building sector has been pushing for the last not only 10 years, but 20, 30 years, which is building more, building more, building more. And of course, we have to build more. We need to build more social housing, which is something that we're definitely lacking here. Only 1% of our market is social housing and protected public housing. But at the moment, building is not the solution. That solution is more of a longer term one. But at the moment, we need to act right now because we are in a crisis. We are in a bubble. And that bubble is not only about offer, but it's about who is making a profit of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Valeria, just to finish, you are part of the tenants union. What resources are available for tenants? Where can they search for protection?
Of course. So organizing in a tenant union, in your local tenant union, is the best way in which you can not only learn about your rights, because there are some particular rights that we actually have, but we don't know about them, right? Which is, for example, not paying agency fees, having the right to a 7-year contract or a 5-year contract, or having the right to, I don't know, your heater, right, your water heater to be repaired if it's broken, which is something that landlords tend to not do because they make the most out of that power dynamic that exists. Mm-hmm. But also organizing ourselves in tenant unions is going beyond that. It's precisely what I was saying earlier. It's for us to collectively think about what other systems, housing systems we can create, right? So it's about creating, once again, that community in which you actually know your neighbors. You can ask for help, not only in terms of housing, but you can start, I don't know, supporting each other. Maybe if one of you falls sick, and you can actually count on the person living next door to you, right? But also, it's about going beyond that and thinking what we can build together. So for example, us in the tenant union, we are not only fighting against evictions, where we manage to stop evictions. We're not only fighting about rent increases, where we manage to stop even the biggest landlords in the world to increase rent at the end of a contract. We're fighting against abusive clauses. So, for example, there's something that has also been normalized in Spain, that is like during your contract, your rent can be increased. And these big landlords do it, right? Because all of a sudden they start making you pay for things that the landlord should always pay, like, for example, the property tax or the community tax, no? Like for the whole building, for you to pay all the costs of the building. Well, so we are also fighting that, but also we're thinking about things such as cooperatives, right? How we can make our block co-ops, and how we can create different ways of living in which we are not underneath someone's hands and underneath someone's power, but we can actually be in control of our own housing. So definitely organizing ourselves in a tenant unions is not about just improving our situation right now, but it's also about changing the system so all of us have access to a safe, secure, stable place that we can call home and where we can grow together and collectively.
Valeria Racu, spokesperson of the Tenants Union, thank you so much for joining us in the English language broadcast.
Thank you so much.
We are approaching the end of today's broadcast, and as usual, we do so with a song. On the 2nd of May, Madrid will be celebrating its Regional Day, which commemorates the uprising against the French invasion back in 1808.
Several activities are organized yearly for this special date, including a recreation of the battle. And this year, the person in charge of inaugurating the celebrations will be Antonio Carmona, with a free concert on Tuesday.
Se fue con las arenas del mar, buscando su destino. Palpito entre las sombras y...
This song is called Para que tú no llores así, so that you don't cry like that. It was released in 2006 in Antonio Carmona's first solo album, and it's a collaboration with singer Alejandro Sanz.
Although it was released a very long time ago, the song is still very relevant. Last year, Antonio Carmona reclaimed the importance of this song on social media, saying that it's about people who lose their lives at sea crossing borders in search of the life they really deserve.
Para que tú no llores así, no pierdas la esperanza, sé que llegará, llegará.
You've been listening to the English language broadcast of Spanish National Radio with Amy Egan and Marilyn Quintana.
Today we've had help from sound technician David Furones and production help from Cristina Dorado.
We thank you for listening and hope you tune in for future broadcasts.
De recuerdos, confío en la persona que da su amor sin conocerlo. Aún queda tiempo para echarnos a andar. No me preocupa si te encuentro al final. Tan solo sé que busqué, que busqué. Para que tú no llores así, no pierdas la esperanza, sé que llegará, llegará. Para que tú no llores así, no pierdas la esperanza, sé que llegará, llegará. Para que tú no llores así, no pierdas la esperanza, sé que llegará. Llores así, no pierdas la esperanza, sé que llegará, llegará. Su destino, palpito entre las sombras sin más, minado en el vacío, reina el silencio en este oscuro lugar, nada es eterno, todo llega al final, tan solo sé que busqué y que busqué. Aunque este mundo me duele y me da. Para que tú no llores así, no pierdas la.